You okay?
Yes, sir.
Good. All right, this is the virtual commission meeting for December the 14th, 2020. This is probably our last meeting of the year, so let's make it count. So our first item is approval of a consent agenda. I think all of this was sent out, and Rick, forgive me if I'm... I just want to point out that we usually read through these and we approve them as a group, but if you have any questions or concerns, you can bring those up and they'll be addressed.
I'm moving to approve the consent agenda.
Well, I'd like to ask a question first. What are we going to do about the minutes that are not in here?
They'll be taken up and approved next time. That's happened before.
Okay, can you send them out in the meantime?
We don't have anything to send out. T was gone for the last couple of weeks, or at least a week, and hasn't finalized them. Hers was kind of an emergency, quick, where she had to leave, so that we don't have them finalized.
And I believe she had a COVID test, and she's waiting on results before she can come back, so...
Right.
Yeah, I have my COVID test tomorrow. That's the earliest I could get it because of the waiting period.
Oh, okay.
And so that will be 24 to 72 hours for results. So as soon as I get back, I'll wrap those up and get those out to you.
Okay, great.
I hope you have your mask on while you're talking here, T.
I have my mask on and I'm sipping chicken soup under the mask.
Oh, good. So, Rick moves for approval, and Jim, did you second?
Yeah, I will. I'll second the motion.
Been moved and seconded for approval of the consent agenda of December 14, 2020. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, good. Agenda revisions. Doug, do we have anything?
The only revision, I think, is something you forgot, Will. Is welcoming Rick.
Oh, excuse me. Well, I was saving that, but
okay.
So, Rick, welcome to your first meeting, and congratulations on your winning the election, and I think you'll enjoy this process.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, great. Yeah, thanks, Doug.
Yeah, no other revisions.
Okay, any revisions from the board members?
None for me.
Okay, good. Okay, our first item is comments from the public. Sean, I see a lot of people on. Do you have questions or comments?
I did turn the chat feature on. I don't have anything on the chat, but if anybody would like to make a comment from the public, please give me your first name and I'll write it down and go in that order.
Richard.
And then for those on the phone, it's star 6 to unmute.
Okay, Richard, go ahead.
Okay, on the 2021 strategic plan, towards the bottom of the statement there, there's a segment that's been lined out. It looks like it was highlighted in yellow and lined out. And I'm a little concerned about what that is all about because according to Solar Today, solar energy is going to go down about 20% per year over the next few years. And hydro is going the other way. And so I would really like to see something in here that would indicate that PUD is going to be continue to look at solar as an economic option or possible options and incorporate it whenever possible.
Now, Richard, we're going to discuss the strategic plan under business items. So we'll talk about that then, I guess.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Richard. Other questions?
I had nobody else, Will.
Okay, good. We'll move on to business items. The first item is contract completion number 191007.
underground distribution relocation. Alan?
John, I don't see Alan on the meeting.
Can you come down?
I'm on here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, he's on 456 phone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Alan.
So the underground distribution relocation project at Bagley Creek, all the work on the above reference contract with MLS Enterprise has been completed, and it's recommended that this work be accepted as complete.
Questions or comments? Do we have a motion?
You're muted.
Yeah, you're muted,
Jim. Jim, you're muted there. Sorry.
Sorry about that. Okay, I'll move that we approve contract completion number 191007, underground distribution relocations.
I second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to accept contract number 191007 with MLS Enterprise, Inc. as complete in the amount of $53,316.90, including Washington State sales tax. All those in favor? Aye.
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 Okay, good. The next item is Resolution 2187-20, adopting the 2021 budget. I believe that's you, Sean.
Yeah, give me just a second. I'm going to share my screen. I got a few slides to go over. Can everybody see?
Yes, we can see.
Yes, we can.
Okay.
We're good.
Okay. So today we've got the final iteration of the 2021 budget. Just have about 20 slides to get through with a few minor changes since the October presentation. And as I go through this, if anybody has any questions, please feel free to jump in and ask away. So with that, Ruth and myself, we're going to be going over the slides. I'm going to take us over the changes on the next slide from October. And then Ruth will go over the final budgets for electric, water, and wastewater. And then after that, she's going to turn it back over to me, and I'll walk us through the rate schedule and the district's long-term outlook. So with that, since we presented to you guys in October, we've had four changes that we've made to the budget. The first change on the top here is distribution transformers, and it's related to transformer replacements. And it's a last-minute project to change out 118 very old and outdated transformers that contain potentially harmful PCBs. These transformers are all more than 40 years old. And from my understanding, the PCB testing on the ones we've already replaced has been between 50 and 700 parts per million. So pretty substantial. A last-minute project, but an important project for 2021. On the personnel taxes and benefits, we increased those due to a recalculation of taxes and benefits, and then also the addition of a part-time position, which also carries over into the line item below that, into salaries and wages. We added a part-time compliance analyst to our accounting department actually last month. We brought on Sarah Canepa, and she's filling that role for us. And then finally, the IT, this increase is to perform some needed security enhancements to shore up some vulnerabilities that we have in the IT infrastructure. That department's done a great job with mitigating ransom attacks as well as phishing attacks against the district. And this project is just another step to fight that fight and keep the district's computer network safe. So those are the overall four changes since October. And with that, I'll let Ruth.
Sean, can I ask a question for you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Those transformers, those are pole mount, pad mounted transformers?
I'll defer to John to answer that question. I'm not exactly sure, Will.
Yes, Will. It's a combination of transformers. Primarily, they're pole-mounted transformers.
25 kV and smaller. So basically, any transformer that we do not have sufficient record to show a PCB test is an unknown transformer. And we have about 118 of these transformers, primarily overhead transformers, within a certain distance from waterways that we, in abundance of caution, should replace. Now, in reality, it's a very small minority of those will actually be PCB, but any transformer without that indication in the record that's manufactured before 1978 is a question mark. And since they're over 40 years old, beyond useful life, we see no harm changing them out. We'll probably receive the benefit of reducing transformer losses in the process.
So you'll just assume that they contain PCBs?
Correct. We don't know any of them that actually do contain PCBs, but they have not been tested, and we prefer not to have the risk for any transformer within a certain distance from waterways.
Sounds prudent. Thank you.
Hey, John, I have a question about this. Do we need to check them for PCBs anyway once we get them down so we know how to dispose of them?
That is absolutely correct. So right now, there's 118 transformers we do not know. Any transformer that does come down, regardless, we have to perform the test. Unless it's actually written, certified, that it is non-PCB. And these old transformers, none of them have that, quote, certification.
Okay. And if the transformer does not have PCB, do they have sort of any value as emergency backup in case we have a natural disaster and lose a bunch of transformers, or how's our stockpile?
Yeah, we have sufficient stock. We keep a certain amount on hand. If they do not have PCBs in them, they'll be looked at for condition. And if for whatever reason we want to keep them because we may figure out have a shortage of some sort, I don't anticipate that. These are very old transformers and need replacement. We do keep adequate stock of quite a few transformers.
Okay, thanks.
I might add too, John, that when we do take down other transformers that can be reconditioned if they didn't have PPC, we do that too. We don't just get rid of them. We recondition a number of transformers too.
That is correct.
Well, I hate to beat this one to death, but after you test the PCBs, are disposal costs involved if you do have PCBs? Is that included in the dollar amount?
No, it is not. Very few of these are actually going to be PCB. The disposal of a mineral oil transformer versus PCB, there's a different route, disposal route, but it's not extremely onerous for us, nor extremely costly. The costly thing is if we have a spill and it gets into a waterway, and that's when the dollars really roll up.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so with that, let me advance my screen here. Okay, I'll turn it over to Ruth, and she'll go over the electric, water, and wastewater final budgets.
Great. Thanks, Sean. Hi, everyone. Like Sean said earlier, if you have any questions during my slides, don't hesitate to stop me and we'll answer your questions. Here we have the summary for electric division showing the actuals for 2019, the projections for 2020, and our proposed budget for 2021. Electric sales are budgeted slightly higher in 21 than 20 due to marginal meter growth and our approved 2021 rate increase effective April 1. Other receipts are budgeted lower in 21 than 20 because we had a one-time sale of our old admin building and we had additional BPA conservation rebate monies that we're not expecting in 21. Also, we're foregoing late fees until fourth quarter in 21 in light of COVID proclamation. We budgeted conservatively for both interest income and customer contributions for 21 compared to 20. The LGIP rate has dropped 161 basis points, or 1.61%, and short-term Treasury yields are expected to remain near zero for quite some time. The last thing to note on the receipt side is the majority of our 2018 bond proceeds will be used this year to reimburse ourselves for the Forks Operations Center and other capital projects. The remaining $850,000 is budgeted to be used in 21, and that will deplete those construction fund money. On the expense disbursement side, a significant change in 21 is that we moved VEBA and holiday pay from salaries and wages to taxes and benefits. Also included in that line item is a new staff benefit. The district is offering a matching 457 contribution up to 2% of straight time. And if we assume 100% participation, that's a cost of $86,000 to the district. Another notable difference between 2020 and 21 is with capital. This year, we established a CETA decarbonization fund with an initial contribution of $5.75 million. Going forward, we will contribute $575,000 annually to the fund until we can complete that project. The net change in reserves is estimated to be a negative $2.1 million. That will lower our unrestricted reserves to 18.4, and Sean will touch on the impacts of that to our day's cash on hand.
A couple of questions, Ruth.
Sure.
I was in the NOINET board meeting. They got their bond sale completed very successfully. And they're going to use that those funds to pay off the loans to participants. Did we capture that, or do you?
Actually, that's a good question. We just got notification of that last week from Paul Harding, their CFO. I think their payoff amount was, hold on one second, let me look that up.
I think it was just shy of $200,000, wasn't it, Ruth?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, 10 participants, I think it was 200,000 each.
Yeah, it was 200,000 for us.
Well, that money should be coming our way. It's not going to help a lot, but
yeah,
a little bit helps.
And having been a week ago that we got notification, that's not included. I can say that with certainty.
Okay, good. Well, the other question I had was, you said fourth quarter for deferring shutoffs and payments and so on, but I think I thought the proclamation, the most recent proclamation, expired in April.
It does expire in April, but I've also heard some rumors that there's going to be some mandatory parameters when they do open it back up, Will, that we might not be able to charge fees for another year after the proclamation expires, and we might have to work with customers on a maximum of a 12-month payment plan. So I'm not quite sure if we'll even be able to resume late charges in 2021.
Okay,
but for planning purposes, we put in fourth quarter sort of as a kind of a happy medium.
It's a moving target. So.
It is, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions on this slide? Okay, I'll move on to water there for you, Ruth.
Okay, thanks. Here's the summary for the water division. The highlights on the receipt side are that 21 water sales for 2021 are budgeted to be slightly higher than 2020, and that's due to our approved 21 rate increase effective February 1, and also the implementation of the new tiered rate structure. Also in 21, water will be drawing the majority of a public works board loan that they secured this year, and those monies are to be used for safety and infrastructure upgrades out in the McClellan Bay CQ service area. Water expense highlights, purchase resources are budgeted lower in 21 compared to 2020, projected 2020, that is. And that's due to a delay in finalizing our purchase water agreement with the City of PA. So the projected 2020 figure of $430,000 actually includes 2019 water purchases. Moving forward, that amount should be closer to $300,000 per year. Also notable, water anticipates significantly increased capital in 21, and that's mostly due to delayed 2020 projects. The net change in reserves is a reduction of $1.6 million, leaving water with $1.4 million, or 137 days cash on hand.
Okay, I'm going to apologize. I'm talkative today.
Sure.
I was in the Waputo Water Committee, and there was a lengthy discussion about relocates for fish passages. And I think Tom Martin is working on potentially hundreds of those in the in our district, and with a cost of $200,000 up to $500,000. That's for the whole project, not just the relocates. But we're responsible for those relocates. Are we budgeted for that, or do we know what how that's going to impact us?
Yeah, I don't want to speak for Tom and his planning, but I can say that over the last 2 years, we've been hit with a significant number of those WaterStop projects. And, in fact, it's going to make me reach out to FCS Group to discuss an updated cost of service based on those projects. They've really hit the water department pretty hard. And I don't know if there's anything that you'd like to add to that, Tom, but I know that it's been a significant detriment to the department as of lately.
Hi. Good afternoon, Commissioners.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah, I'd just like to add a little bit to that. Yeah, Will, you were on that call. we've been working with Waputo since June on this issue. And a lot of other PUDs, water departments, and electric are in the same situation as we are. We're trying to find ways to fund these projects that came unexpectedly and were unexpectedly very expensive. So what we're all doing is juggling our long-term capital plans and delaying some of the projects, some indefinitely, so we can pay for these expensive replacements or relocations and then replacements of our water lines.
And I believe Waputo's ask was for each utility to come up with what the estimated cost was going to be, and you're doing that, right? So I think the commission would like to hear that number when you get it.
Well, we have two
I don't want to hear it. I don't know.
Well, we have two more projects coming up over in Port Angeles, Lee's Creek and Ennis Creek. And I'm not sure how WaStop plans to allocate costs on that between utility and them. And I'm trying to work with them to figure that out.
Okay. Good luck. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks, Sean. So here we have the summary for wastewater. The most notable change between 2020 and 21 are that there was less labor work to the sewer system in 2020 due to a number of reasons, COVID being one of them. Per Tom, he let me know that the WaStop projects were taking up a lot of time. They were short one crewman for 8 months. The other notable change is the capital. A 2020 project was delayed. That's the lower lift station for Sunshine 1, and that's been postponed until 2021. And with that, we are anticipating no significant change in reserves. Here we have the 2021 proposed budgets for all three systems, and this sheet will actually be included in the resolution approving the budget. And with that, Sean will now go over our rate increases and the impacts of those rate increases and our financial outlook.
Great. Thanks, Ruth. Just real quick, kind of a history background here. Our budget, it factors in a two-year approved rates that were adopted back in 2019. And these rates were based off of a cost of service study performed by FCS Group, which occurred in 2018. And at that time, they had recommended that the district transition to a true cost to serve based on a minimum system size model. And basically what that model is for minimum system size is, what does it take to deliver 1 kilowatt hour of energy to the customer's meter? And so it factors in things like conductor, pole size, transformers, etc. And whatever it takes infrastructure-wise to deliver that 1 kilowatt, that's what goes into our basic customer charge. And then the other charge, which is our energy charge or our kilowatt-hour charge, would be more of our variable costs, and those costs go into that energy charge. And so based on their results in 2018, they had initially suggested to the district that we increase rates by 3.8% for years 2019 through 2021, and then 3.5% for the out years. And through adherence to the fundamentals of our strategic plan and strategic projects, as well as some help from some cold weather, we were able to lower that from 3.8 to 3.5% increases in the initial years. And as you'll see in just a few more slides, we're projecting lower than their recommendation in the out years as well. And obviously, these are all subject to change. A lot of it has to do with the BPA rate cases and where their rates end up. But just as a point of note, since we are entering the BP22 rate case right now and the final CEDA rules should be out very soon, I do plan to seek an updated cost of service study from FCS. Probably towards the end of the first quarter, we'll engage them and start that process. And it usually takes them anywhere from 4 to 6 months. But we do have some significant changes, both legislative and power procurement, that we need to plan for and take into consideration. But with that, I'll show you what we have for the already adopted rates moving into next year in these next slides. So the next three slides break it down by basic charge, kilowatt hours, and demand. And so this first slide here is our basic customer charge. And just using residential single phase as our example, the rate currently is $36.34, and it will be going to $39.55 in April of next year, which is an 8.83% increase, which is what FCS pointed out to us, that our basic charge was disproportionately low compared to the rest of our charges. So the majority of our rate increase is on the basic customer charge. And as you can see in the kilowatt hour charge, again using single phase residential as the example, we're moving in a fraction of a penny from 7.5 cents to 7.61 cents. And so this was high compared to our basic customer charge, so less of the increase is going in here. And then finally, on the demand, we've only got three classes of service that this even affects: our medium, large, and industrial customers. And FCS calculated this at very close to the standard 3.5% increase. So these are the new rates for demand charges April of next year. And then how does this affect the average customer? So the average residential customer who uses 1,250 kilowatt hours per month, their existing bill would be $130.09. And then April of next year, it would go to $134.68 for a net dollar impact of $4.59. Okay, moving on to the 10-year outlook. I know there's a lot going on the slide. Just one caveat to note here. This is based off of several assumptions, and one of them being that our average BPA increases every 2 years is 5.5%. And we've entered into the BP22 rate case, and their initial speculation is that it's going to be as low as 0%. So I did put some asterisks next to these proposed rate increases for 22 and 23. Assuming DPA holds true, I'm quite confident that we can do better than what we're initially proposing here. But I've left them this way until we do get final confirmation on the rate case and what the outcome is going to be. Having said that, the rest of this is our forecast for CDEP, and long-term capital. It includes our AMI rollout. And as you can see, the next couple of years, we do start to dip in our reserves and our days cash on hand up to a low in 2024 of 111 days. And then we begin to recover in the out years and finally hit our internal goal of 151 days. And just a sidebar, the rating agencies, the underwriters, and cost of service, they all do recommend that you shoot for 180 days cash on hand to receive the most favorable rates and ratings from the bonding agencies. And then also this outlook, it incorporates the implementation of the CETA Decarbonization Fund. In 2020, we will make an initial deposit of $5.75 million to the fund, and then every year thereafter, we'll rate fund $575,000. And this should put us in a good place to meet legislative requirements with CETA. And in a few years from now, you know, in these out years here, we could maybe look at doing a project such as a distribution scale battery project that will ultimately pay for itself through demand reduction on our BPA bill. And I guess one final thing to note, this 10-year plan assumes that we rate finance all capital moving forward, at least in the next 10 years, and that we don't go out for any additional borrowing. And in these out years here, this is when our first bonds fall off and we lose that debt service. So our 2016 refinancing bonds mature. And as a result of the less debt service, we'll see lower rates in these projected out years.
Can I ask a couple of questions, John?
You bet.
First, I believe Bonneville took a holiday from their spill surcharge and their reserve surcharge. Do we know if that's going to come back up in the next rate case?
Well, the spill surcharge is actually incorporated into Tier 1 rates now. But as far as the reserve surcharge, at the last QBR, they did talk about some positive forecasts. And they don't believe that that will be in play for the next rate case.
Okay. And the next question is on CETA. We thought we had the final version of the rulemaking. Has that been approved? Do we know what there's no surprises there?
They've given us a draft of the final rules, but they're subject to change. I believe they're due in their final form at the end of the year. And so we should have approved rules January 1.
Thank you.
See that. You're muted, Jim.
John, can you go? I'm having trouble locating the briefing I had on the side. Can you go back to the base charge slide, a couple of slides back?
This one?
The basic charge. You know, I know we compare reasonably, you know, on these basic charges with some other PUDs, you know, some are lower. But, you know, it's been brought up, and we discussed this a year and a half ago, I guess, about our strategy here. But I don't, you know, given the projection trends with renewables and so forth, particularly solar and now battery, you know, obviously a high base charge does not necessarily encourage homeowners from putting more solar or batteries and all this kind of stuff in. And so in that context, I'm not looking that we, you know, unpack the base charge, you know, anytime soon, but I want to kind of keep a note for us to remember that we really need to think strategically about this and say and ask ourselves, are we making the right trade-off here? And should we be adjusting, you know, our base charge and rates to encourage and incentivize more customers to pick up on solar and battery combination in order to reduce our infrastructure charges and demand charges.
Yeah, and when we do a cost of service study, they always give a presentation to the board, and we can play with the inputs if the commission wishes. I guess one thing I'll say on that is we're at a little bit of a disadvantage in our utility because we have such a large service territory and a challenging topography and a lot of miles of line, and that's what really makes up that minimum system size that goes into that basic customer charge. And, you know, if we were in a more condensed area, like, you know, even the city of Port Angeles, where I think they have 15 square miles of service territory, it might be a little bit easier to control. But just due to the nature of the storms and how large our service territory is, it is challenging. And I do understand and recognize what you're saying. It does become a deterrent at some point for solar customers to install PV systems.
Well, I guess the flip side of that is that most solar customers are using the utility as a battery, so this infrastructure is necessary to maintain that. So, and that's a fixed cost that we're covering here.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of a catch-22. Did you have any other questions on that slide, Jim?
No, I just want to make a note that, you know, that let's not just assume that this is locked in forever here, that we may want to revisit it.
Okay. Did you have something, Doug?
No, I just I think you explained it good, the cost of service and the cost equally divided amongst people who have infrastructure. We don't give any favoritism to anybody. We look at charging what it costs us, the cost of service for that infrastructure. And the other PUDs over the years have actually increased their basic. There's some that are like a Seattle or so that are very low, but again, they're a heavy, dense area. And but areas even like, if I recall off the top of my head, in Mason 3, which you would think would be pretty comparable, I think they had like an effect of like 600 acres compared to ours, like 2,000 acres or so of service area. So we do have, like you mentioned, the topography and the makes a big difference for us for service.
And we have a lot of trees, too.
A lot of trees, yeah.
This next slide here is one that I incorporated at the encouragement of Commissioner Waddell during our October presentation. Excuse me. He had asked, based on the previous slide, if I could incorporate the proposed rate increases into a before and after dollar amount figure for each of the years. And so I've done that here. So for 2021, as an example, the current rates for, and this is a residential customer consuming 1,250 kilowatt hours a month, their current dollar figure would be $130.09, and then after the increase would be $134.68. And then this is the net change right here. Is this kind of what you were looking for, Jim, when you asked for that slide? I think you're muted again.
Yeah, this is helpful, Sean. I appreciate it. And, you know, it also gives you a quick way of looking at, you know, okay, so, you know, 10 times 5 is the average there, pretty close. So we're adding, you know, $50 per customer over the next 10 years. So, you know, kind of gives you a sense of what are we doing, you know, is that inflation for what and so forth. But it allows us, I think, to visualize that a lot easier. So appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. That's a great suggestion. So thank you for that. On the next slide here, this is our residential rate comparison. This is kind of our benchmark of how are we comparing to everybody else. One thing to note here is that when I was going through and trying to find rates for all these utilities, the ones that you see here are their current rates, and this blue and green bar on the top here, this is our proposed 2021 April rate. So a lot of these utilities didn't have increases in 2020, and I've heard some rumors that some of them are even considering double-digit increases in 21 because they fell behind. And so with that, I would anticipate that, you know, we might move down a few rungs here on the ladder, which to my point earlier is pretty impressive considering our service territory, the miles of line topography, and the fact that we're, I think, the largest service area in the West, PUDs. It just illustrates that, you know, our district does an exceptional job at providing reliable and stable rates for our customers. In fact, some of the lowest in the nation. So I always like looking at this slide.
John, are any of these PUDs, are all these PUDs 100% electrical in terms of their residential customers?
Are they 100% electrical?
In other words, they're not heating with gas.
Oh, let's see here.
No, I would assume some of them are heating with gas, Sean.
Yeah, I'm pretty
sure. I think like Snohomish would have gas available in their district.
Yeah.
Well, it's just something to keep in mind when you look at these comparisons, because it does alter the, you know, the energy usage, obviously, and that may impact the relevancy of comparing these two things.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer to them. I'm not sure which ones have gas and which ones don't, unfortunately.
And the customers that don't have gas or do have gas obviously have a separate bill for gas, too.
Right.
Yeah, and this is John. I would add that, of course, we're normalizing to 1250 kilowatt hours. And if Snohomish has significant gas, their actual electric bill is going to be somewhat lower comparably. But then on the other hand, they would have a gas bill as well.
Okay. On the next slide here, this is the water rates for 2021. As you recall, the board has approved a five-year plan for all water systems to achieve rate parity, and we're on the second year of that plan in 2021 here. And then these corresponding bars are down here. They show what the dollar impacts would be for a customer using 700 cubic feet of water for these different systems. And then down here circled is the dollar impact per water district as well. And with that, staff recommends that the commission adopt Resolution 2187-20. Adopting the electric, water, and wastewater operating fund budgets for 2021 as finally determined, unless there's any other questions that Ruth or I might be able to answer for you.
Questions? Discussion? Okay, so do we...
Rick, I have a discussion. Wanted to let you know, unless there's a tie, I plan on abstaining from this vote since I haven't been part of putting the budget together.
Rick, I, you know, of course, that's a good option. I just have to point out that, you know, we got to live with this budget through the coming year and make decisions based on it. So, I don't know. But if that's your choice, that's fine. So do I have a motion?
I'll move that we move that we approve Resolution 2187-20 adopting the 2021 budgets.
Okay, and I'll go ahead and second that. So it's been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 2187-20, which adopts the Electrical Operating Fund, the Water Operating Fund, the Wastewater Operating Fund budgets as finally determined. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, good. So that passes.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Sean. And Ruth, thank you. Next item is the 2021 strategic plan. I believe, Doug, you're going to discuss that. Doug, you're muted.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You know, that's every virtual meeting I go to, that's a problem.
I know. I always see everybody else talking while they're muted, and I think, how in the world can they do that? But anyway, let's see. Can you see my screen yet?
Yep. Yeah, I said yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, well, I want to start off just mentioning that a number of months ago we put this 2021 strategic plan, the draft we had, on the website, and we encouraged anyone, customers, to make comments on it. So the results of these comments are here in this strategic plan that you see in front of you now. And it shows that we've had customer comments, we've got commissioner comments, and we have some staff comments that went into these changes. And as you look throughout this, the changes will be in green and yellow. And the green ones are additions, and the yellow ones are usually cross-through ones. And are in yellow. So let me see if I can get this on the screen. Okay, let's see. So anyway, let's go through this and see if there's any questions on it. And I'll throw it out to the commissioners. You've had a chance to look them over, and if you have any comments, again, these are the cross-offs, and the additions are based on public comments and commissioner comments and staff comments. We've taken them and we've added the ones that and tried to make the verbiage come out right. So this is the first one that there was any changes on. Is there any comments on this?
Yeah, Doug. I sent you an email a while ago about this. This comment that struck out that we had in an earlier draft, I guess. I still think it's important to make this point. It's something that we have to be acutely aware of, what is going on in the future here in terms of changing market conditions, BPA's overall situation, what hydropower is doing in terms of cost and performance and so forth. And I know BPA, having participated in a lot of their calls, is doing strategic asset management maybe to a better degree than they have in the past. And I think it behooves us to make this an overt statement of what we need to be doing. And, because I don't think, I realize I've only been, in the PUD business for 2 years, but I've been dealing with hydropower for 20 years, is that what we're facing with changing market conditions, new technologies, and the transmission grid reliability and all that kind of stuff, I think we need to apply a little extra due diligence. And so that's why I think we need to maintain this statement or something very similar to it.
This is Rick. I disagree. I was the one who crossed it out.
Okay.
Why?
So
yeah,
I guess
point out that this is the strategic plan which we go back and refresh every year. We don't know yet even what the next rate case, what the contracts are going to look like. So if this turns out to be a problem in the future, we can come back and revisit this. But right now, it seems a little redundant.
Okay.
Well, I think that this is on us now, and it's and the point is that we need to walk into this eyes wide open and rate case, or, you know, yeah, I understand that, but it's bigger than the rate case. You know, we're in the beginning stages of a, you know, the redevelopment of BPA contracts and the assumptions that they assume about PUDs going into this thing, and their financial well-being and so forth. And I know I've talked to other commissioners around the state about this, and, you know, they're also like, yeah, it's a quandary, and they're concerned about it. They don't know exactly what to do, but it's just a recognition that we need to, you know, beyond just what CETA is telling us to do, but, you know, what's the overall structure of the market, and how is that going to affect our ratepayers?
Okay. You want to move on, Doug?
Yeah, let me move on through theirs. The next slide, where there's any comments, let me see, I think it's down here, on the provide stable rates. And I kind of, I crossed off one thing here, but the reason that pandemic should actually be, shouldn't be crossed off, we can leave that in there. I apologize for that. And the green number 9 says create restricted capital account to proactively plan for CETA compliance. So this is just an added one that staff wanted to put on there regarding the CETA that we're working and have been working on. So I wouldn't think there's any objection to that at all. If there is, let me know. If not, I'll move on to slide number 12, which the excellence picture of excellence was changed slightly. It says the district meets all environmental regulations and implements proven technologies that result in low cost to our customers. So if you recall, we had added, I think in the last commissioner meeting we were discussing, when we discussed this, we were looking at adding the technologies in there, and this just kind of rewords it to make sure that no matter what we do, we're looking at our lowest cost options to our customers.
Doug, is there some reason you wanted to skip slide 10 or page 10?
Let me go back. I'm sorry. No, there wasn't any reason except I didn't see it on my screen. Thank you. Need to make this a little bigger, I guess, here. So on this one,
yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, the way you've got this portrayed, we really can't see but part of the document. So we're seeing the lower right-hand quadrant.
You can't see the... Can other people see it or not? I can see the whole document.
I see the whole slide.
You can't see that, Joe?
Okay, I can. Yeah, I'm messing with it. I got to make you smaller. That's how it works.
There you go.
Disappear at this point, Doug, but I can read it now.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Sorry.
So basically, it's just for telecommunications, it was encourage support and work with our local internet service. It was just rewording. The first one said maintain service level agreements, and that the wording, we didn't change it to anything different. We reduced the wording some, and we're just talking about encouraging support, working with local ISPs. And then number 3, continue to pursue grants that can expand broadband throughout our county in a cost-responsible manner. As you all know, we've been working on that, and we continue to look for grants. That's probably the best way in the future that we can ever expand our broadband throughout the county is getting some grants that can pay for that. We've brought up a number of the different issues with that regarding once it's installed, the actual O&M costs that would have to be continued. So it's a very complex issue, but it does show that we're looking at continuing to look for grants and inspecting or going further into broadband if possible. And then number four says continue to expand broadband for our services that increases access to Collin County unserved and underserved communities if surplus capacity is available for ISPs. So that just is further emphasizing the telecommunications. And this was one comment from one of our public input that we expanded a little bit. Any comments on that?
I like that, Doug, because we don't know where the future lies in terms of PUDs being able to provide further service given the educational requirements and so forth like that and so forth. So anyway, that's a good add.
Right. Okay. Looks like I might have missed one back here, too. Nope, I got that one. Okay. So let me move on. And we took care of this one on environmental responsibilities. Just a district meets all environmental regulations and implements proven technology that results in the lowest cost to our customers. So we discussed that already. We move on to the next one here. Okay, this is a manager resource portfolio. Number five, develop and revise net revenue model on a monthly basis using NISC monthly and reporting. And that was removed because that particular initiative has been completed, and we actually do that now. Number six, develop capability to meter time of use for electricity. And as you know, with us putting the AMI system, in the future, we believe we'll have the time of use available. And, of course, that helps with a lot of things with electric vehicles at some point in time. Would be a real benefit for that for us. And then number seven, we just reduced the size of that because it was kind of repetitious, or it was, if we just say, monitor and review CETA-compliant power supply technologies, period. That includes all the technologies that we've been talking about. And we do the same. We do, I mean, it's just a given for us that we do the financial feasibilities on any of these if we were going to pursue them further. As you all know, we've looked at solar. We've looked at the battery storage. We've actually even looked a little bit at the SMRs and the microgrid we're talking about. So just a general comment that monitor and review CETA compliance power supply technologies.
Doug, it looks like it's just a shortened version, but I think there's a distinction there. Part of this is CETA. The other part is just looking at financial feasibility of these different things, as they may help us reduce infrastructure costs, demand-side stuff, resiliency, and that kind of thing. So it needs to be a separate bullet, this, you know, the and conduct periodic, blah, blah, blah. But this gets us beyond just looking at these things that are listed there from a CETA compliance standpoint.
Okay, any comments on that?
A large strategy in the past, like with the Energy Independence Act and so on, we've tried to, we do comply with that, of course, we don't have an option, but we've tried to approach that, doing it at the least cost and the least impact to our customers' rates. I think we've been pretty successful with that. You know, some of the legislative updates coming, different organizations. There's probably a carbon tax coming. There's probably some form of cap and trade, maybe both. The legislature doesn't seem to be timid about pancaking these things. So I think going beyond what CETA requires and what some other legislation might require is a little bit over the top.
I agree. I think we should keep it the way it is.
I disagree with that because, you know, we're have interest. We have people, ratepayers are interested in further progressing solar and battery and grid technologies and, you know, regardless of CETA. And I don't know why we want to sort of just keep it within the context of CETA.
Well, CETA gets us to 100% 100% clean, Jim. I don't know what more you want to do besides that. That's
just
the lowest cost.
No, it's not about just being 100% clean. It's about looking at how these technologies can reduce our infrastructure costs or reduce our demand charges and stuff like that.
Well,
and resiliency.
I mean, that's an obvious that everything we do, we're going to be doing at the lowest possible cost to meet CETA. I mean, that's what we do all the time. That's what all the technology we've talked about in the last year is looking at the technology.
We're almost 100% compliant. So when we get to 100%, we just stop doing, we stop encouraging solar and battery and all this other stuff.
When we get
if it reduces costs, we continue to look at it. But if it doesn't reduce costs, we don't.
Why wouldn't we want to keep this in there then?
I vote we move on to the next.
Okay, well, we know we got some comments on that, so we know where we are there. Let me move on. Okay, next one is on the management, our managing risk, strategic objective on managing risk. Jim had been mentioned, I think it was the last meeting, or well, he's mentioned in the past too, even last year, that he felt we should have an external component in the objectives. And so we, staff, didn't receive anything, so we went ahead and put together a managed risk external. And if you read over these, this whole page here, our slide is a new slide that was put together by staff to address the external component of managing risk. So, any comments on that, or are we okay with that?
Doug, I don't know if you saw it. I sent you an email about an hour before the meeting with a comment about this. And what I suggested, notwithstanding my poor spelling, I said, given the rapidly evolving nature of, didn't say rapidly evolving nature, although it could be construed as rapidly.
It may be rabid, Jim.
Anyway, again, I thought that, you know, since here you're dealing with what I've just been talking about explicitly, that we add a 10th bullet here. And so that's what I provided you. I don't know if the other commissioners have seen that yet. I guess so.
I had responded to you, Jim. I just asked you to, because it was only a few minutes before the meeting, to ask you to bring it up in the meeting.
Okay. So what I said was, Will and Rick, is that given the rapidly evolving nature and decreasing cost of generation and storage technologies, the increasing cost of hydropower is noted in BPA's strategic plan, and the development process for the next round of long-term BPA contract, the district will place emphasis on these emerging trends to ensure ratepayers are receiving power, reliability, and resiliency at the lowest reasonable cost.
Well, that's just about the same thing that we just took out, but
well, this is the external section where you would deal with that.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Why?
I like the slide the way it is.
Okay, let's. What else did you have, Doug?
Hey, wait a minute. I've got another comment on this one. I think you should add where you list. On the left, the district and the picture of excellence, you say district works with outside agencies such as, I would put such as BPA, WAPUTA, WAPAG, and I don't know why we leave PPC in there. I know there's some interest in, about getting back in, and that's fine. We can put them back in if that makes sense at some point in the future. But I think we've already had this out once, earlier versions.
I think we should leave it in there.
Yeah, I mean, this is looking at our strategic plan. So this is kind of like a picture of excellence is what it says. So the picture of excellence would, at least in my opinion, would include having a membership and being active in PPC.
Well, we need to debate that because all of these groups, we look at them annually and decide and talk about them to decide their value and whether they're really meeting our needs or not, and versus the cost we pay for them and everything. So that's a decision we make each year.
Well, I guess go ahead. Go ahead, Rick. I'm sorry.
I support leaving PPC in there.
Yeah, I was going to say that PPC is as far as analysis and contract analysis, economic, legal, and so on. They're one of the premier agencies. Long term or short term, we should get back into PPC. But even if we don't, we're going to indirectly be influenced by the work they do. So I think it's a good idea to keep them there.
Okay, if I move on to the last one, is in the financial responsible objective. And again, that's just adding things for CETA. Number 7, create low-income CETA program to mitigate rate impacts, and we're working on that. And scoping plan for utility scale qualifying CETA projects and corresponding restricted cash account. And we're working on that too. So those are just new things that we have been working on this past year that we haven't in the past that we would want to look at finalizing in the future going forward. And then on the big gaps on the left column there, we just added a recommendation for a 150 to 180 day reserve, which Sean talked about when he was given the presentation. That's a goal for us. So if there's no objection there, I'm pretty well finished with the plan, and I guess I need to know what the commission wants to do with all this.
Okay, so do we have a motion to approve the strategic plan for 2021?
I move that we accept the strategic plan for 2021.
The way it's shown, crossed out and added?
Yes, sir.
Yes, okay. And revised. Do I have a second? Well, I'll go ahead and second your motion, Rick. So it's been moved and seconded to approve the 2021 strategic plan as revised. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
I opposed, and I just want to point out again is that this is a great management plan, but I think we're missing an opportunity here to think about the future in a more strategic way, and that's what the comments that are not in there. Deal with that in what I've already said in terms of shifting market conditions and so forth. And so I'd like that to be noted in the record, please.
Okay, that'll show up in the minutes, Jim. Okay, so moving on to correspondence and communication. Doug, do we have any?
No, not today, Will.
Okay, great. All right, our next item is commissioner reports. Rick, since you're new, do you have anything, or you want to?
Sure. I've been trying to get up to speed on all the paperwork. I've been inundated with paperwork, and I really appreciate the staff giving me the information I need to get up to speed. I'm really disappointed that we had been kicked out of PPC, and to that end, I reached out to PNUCC. As you know, we're getting ready to get into a new rate case, and right now we really don't have any representation, no way for us to express our opinions. And PNUC was not interested in us joining. So we continue to be cast out from public power, and I'm hoping that we can rectify that in the future, but that's all I've got, Doug.
Yeah, I think kind of further your comment, we've kind of become an outlier in public power, so we need to re-ingratiate ourselves.
Well, you're
I'm muted. Sorry.
There you go.
Jim, did you have something to report?
Well, yeah, first off, I don't really agree with what Rick just said. I think, you know, we have a really good long-term and current relationship to FLPAG. And I believe looking at their work for the last year and a half is really good stuff. It's really effective. The exchanges are good. It's a smaller group, a group that's more consistent with our PUDs and so forth. PPC's got a large base of groups. It's got a lot of different views going on in there. So I'm not sure why you say that we're not involved with the rape case. WAPAG is very active in terms of on that, the contract process and everything. They have a long history here, too. And so I think it's, you know, and you can characterize it being thrown out, ostracized, whatever, any way you want, but I think that's really not the case. And we also have to keep in mind is that all these rape cases, the PPA contract process and all, that's all public stuff anyway. It's not like there's a, you know, some secret cabal that, you know, decides every bit of this out in some back room someplace. We as PUD or private citizens or anybody or associations can engage in these processes. And I for one, have certainly been doing that over the last year and a half with VPA especially and WAPAG and WAPUDA, of course, too. So I don't think that we're missing a whole lot here. So other comments. There wasn't a lot going on the last 2 weeks. Just a one minor thing, I did get a call from a customer out on the west side about a busted water main flooding her house and so forth. And Doug, I appreciate you, you know, giving me the input. And I think it's critical that we get that water main replaced as soon as possible. So I hope, you know, you said it'd be a couple of weeks to get a bid package out on the street. And so I appreciate you keeping me posted on that. That's all I have.
Thanks, Jim. Well, I did a number of things. I called into the WAPUDA Water Committee, and we've already talked about the fish passage issue. That, to me, that one kind of popped out as a future risk. Called into the WAPUDA conference, and it was a good... pretty good presentations. We had John Harrison there who gave an update on BPA, talked about the ongoing process to join EIM, talked about the Northwest resource adequacy efforts that are going on by the Power Pool and others, including Energy Northwest. Also talks briefly about the litigation going on with the Columbia System Operating Plan and the Environmental Impact Statement. Talked about the strategic plan for Bonneville, and their goal is to continue to keep preference customers and especially load-following customers pretty well on hold and be a provider of choice for those as well as others. We had guest speakers. We had Legislative Representative Grierson, and her main topic was broadband and what's going on in the legislature with broadband. It appears that there's a huge amount of interest at the legislation to further broadband, incentivize it. Of course, retail authority for PUDs is one of those issues. We also had the director of DNR, Hillary France. She's a very good presenter, and she got into issues that she also talked about broadband. Broadband is a hot topic in Olympia. They're talking about even DNR talking about asking for $2 million for legislation to further broadband, which is $2 million. I don't think people have a good idea of the scope and the cost of getting broadband out. I mean, $2 million is not going to go very far. She also talked about fires, and surprisingly, she talked in investing in forest health. That now fires are, they've got about $153 million to dedicate to fires, but most of it is reactive. They have fires, they go out and put them out, and she drew the comparison between what Washington does and what California does. I'm not sure California is the best model to follow, but she's saying that we need to be more proactive on forest health and the resources to fight these fires when they occur. She's made the statement that Washington fire response is underfunded, and she kind of made a derogatory statement about the legislator, that legislators are, they don't see the priority because they only respond to problems which are right in their sight, line of sight. So there's more work to be done there, and I think the Waputo and others need to work with the legislation to see if they can't get a little more proactive response. I also attended the NOAANET board meeting. They had their annual meeting, which lasted about 15 minutes, where they, it's a meeting is required by the law, their bylaws. They approved the minutes, there's no business, and they adjourned. And then the board meeting itself, they talked about financials, which are looking very good for NOAANET. They're pretty well on course with that. They also elected new officers. Linda Goth from Mason 3 has been the president of that for the last two or three years. And so her term expired, and they elected new officers. Ron Gaterberg, Jason Dunsmore is the VP, and Chris Folda is the secretary. So not a lot of changes there. They had a nominating committee, and there was really no nominations coming from the membership, so the nominating committee did all of that. Question came up, and actually this came up from the Energy Northwest member of the board. I'm the Energy Northwest representative there, but questioning the generous salaries and benefits for NOAANET staff. So they're going to come back with some justification for that, what the what comparisons they draw, what they have to do to remain competitive, which, of course, in the IT world is completely different. So it'd be interesting to see what that, what happens there. Let's see, what else? They approved their budget for 2021, $40,559,600, which is 9% over the 2020 budget. Their reserves will go up about another 5%, which is good. And the big news was that the bond issue was very conservative, I mean very successful. And as a result, in fact, they got, I think it was 1.9% on those bonds, and well oversubscribed. They had $25 million or so that they were offering, and they got offers for up to $70 million in bonds. So
it was $76 million.
I thought 70 million was pretty close enough, yeah. But thanks, Steve. Early in 2021, they'll come out with a plan on how to spend those bond proceeds, and we'll see where that goes. COVID report, minimal impact on the business, and so that's a good thing. You know, they had a lot of fire damage to the fiber system, which, of course, is leased from Bonneville, and they've praised Bonneville for the response in expediting fixes to those, which are well on the way, so that's good. Talked about 5G opportunities for rural areas, which seem to be coming up, which is kind of interesting. You know, we have thought that 5G would take about 10 years to get out here. Don't know what these initiatives will look like or whether they'll be well funded or so on, but it may be that that's going to be a shorter term thing. They are exploring synergies with Energy Northwest to promote mutual offerings. That would be what Energy Northwest Business Development is doing. And again, we'll see what comes out of that from the future. They gave a legislative update. Session will start in January. It's going to be a long session. It'll all be virtual. It was kind of interesting that a lot of the legislators don't have sufficient broadband to participate from their home or their home location, so they're going to have to come into their offices to participate in those virtual meetings. And under the legislative updates, and I think most people have heard this, Jay Inslee is in the final top three to be Biden's climate advisor. I guess you could add climate change advisor in there. So that appears that if he's successful, we may have a change in the governor's office.
Actually, he's up for Secretary of EPA.
Well, I don't know. I thought they'd already filled that slot or had their candidates come
forward. That's what I saw yesterday. Maybe
yeah, changed. Yeah, well, they do those. And that's all I had.
Hey, Will, this is Jim. I apologize. I thought we reported on the Laputa meeting, the last BOT meeting, but I guess not. But anyway, I was at many of those sessions at Laputa, too, so I was just listening. You did a great job covering all that stuff. I was just checking my notes to see if there was anything else I heard. I thought it was kind of interesting when Hillary Franz was talking about DNR lands and so forth, and they're pushing solar projects. They've got three built so far on DNR lands, and actually that's a pretty good idea because it's a lot easier to put up, you know, solar on DNR lands, you know, large scale solar, utility scale solar, than it is, you know, elsewhere. So I thought that was a great initiative DNR is doing. And I think, if I heard it right, Energy Northwest also talked about they started up a 4-megawatt plant, solar and battery, in November there at Hanford. And it also, and I think you've mentioned this before, the 300-acre site is under study or development or whatever. I think one of the point, I guess it was made during the Friday presentation on digital equity, is that, you know, they were talking about how to close this divide between, you know, the last mile or whatever it is, and, you know, for educational purposes and so forth, but they made the point that the PUDs need to be leading the discussion with the legislature. So, you know, again, here's where, you know, it's important for PUD commissioners to directly engage with whoever, in this case, the legislature. So anyway, that's sorry for the omission there.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. That's a good update. Okay, let's take a short break before we get into staff reports. Not sure how long those will be, but a little potty break might be called for. We'll be back in about 5 minutes. Okay, is everybody back? Good. Well, we'll go ahead and start with staff reports. Make sure I'm unmuted here. Yep. First item is proclamations 2023 and 2028. I believe, Nicole, you're going to discuss those.
Yeah, real quick, we'll put this email out, so I'm not sure who all has received it, but for the purposes of the public that have joined us as well, the governor has extended proclamation 2028. It's now .14 version. That's on the Open Public Meetings Act and Public Records Act. So right now we are under the no public meetings until the termination of the state of emergency or 11:59 p.m. on January 19th. So we're just going to continue with Zoom until that time or unless it gets extended. More importantly, Proclamation 20-23, now .13 version on ratepayer assistance and preservation of essential services. This extends the moratorium on disconnects, refusing to reconnect, and charging late fees until the termination of the state of emergency or 11:59 p.m. on April 30th. It's concerning because that's going to be pretty much going out a year since this started. And Sean, I don't know if you want to touch on the statistics you gave us for our arrearages, but that's starting to creep up again now that the CARES funds have all been distributed. So January 19th for the Open Public Meetings Act and April 30th for the no disconnects. So that's what I have there.
Okay. Thank you. Sean, did you have anything else on that?
No, I guess I could just add that when we did have the CARES funds and we were dispersing that money, we did see a temporary dip in our total outstanding arrears, especially in the 60 and 90-day columns. But now that we've gotten into some of the higher bill months, I guess, because of the heating, for the first time, we saw our 90-day bucket go over $100,000. So it is concerning that they've extended it out to April 30th because that's going to encompass the majority of our high use months. So it's something that I'm definitely watching and keeping an eye on.
I noticed that I think it was Cowlitz. No, it wasn't. It was Chelan. Chelan got something like $500,000.
There were several. Mason 3 got $300,000.
Great Harbor got quite a bit.
Grace Harbor got $500,000, I believe. There was a couple that got $500,000. And they, you know, we were just at a disadvantage because we were the first. And our county had a lot of restrictions on, you know, we had to use a matrix that customers could get a maximum dollar amount of a couple hundred dollars. And what some of these other counties and PUDs had come up with was they got clarification from the Department of Commerce that it was okay to pay all arrears since March. So they were offering their customers, you know, several thousand dollars in assistance, where we were offering a couple hundred. So it was a much easier for them to spend $300,000 to $400,000 than the program that we had in place.
But who designed the program?
Our county.
We're the recipient of the county.
That's what I thought. The county commission did that. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the disadvantages of being the first mouse to the cheese.
Well, it just seems ironic since, you know, this area out here is economically depressed and so on, much more than Chelan, for example. So it just doesn't seem to pass the smell test.
Now,
we did go back to the county, though, and let them know if new funds are available. We'd like to look at changing that matrix. So hopefully it'd be much better in the future.
Good.
Well, the governor did put $15 million from the state that's going to be available to direct utility assistance, and that's actually been turned over to the CAP agencies to be administered through LIHEAP. And we've talked to Markey over at Olympic Community Action, and she wasn't aware of that until we brought it to her attention last week. And so she got on the phone with Department of Commerce, and she's not aware yet how much will be allocated for Collum County, but she is aware of it now, and she is working with Commerce on getting those funds. So hopefully in the next few weeks I can give you an update on, you know, maybe how much more we'll have this year for LIHEAP than we did in previous years.
Great. Good. Well, thank you. Anything else on that? Okay, next item is the Nonet bond sale. I apologize, Sean, I didn't mean to preempt you. I'm not even the Clallam representative. I'm the Energy Northwest representative, so you've got a freebie there.
Thank you.
I think Steve's going to give the update on that.
Well, I was going to give the update, but you said everything I was going to say, Will. So I will add that as board, we are going to still hold their feet to the fire as to what they're going to spend this extra $1 million a year on that the bond proceeds gave them. So, I think Noinet's, like you said, Noinet's in pretty good position. They're in better financial position than they have been since their inception, I think, with the new revenue streams that they're getting. So hopefully it'll be beneficial for everyone.
Good. All right, well, very good. Next item is the energy solar update. Hutsi, how do you pronounce that? John, you got that one?
Yes, I do. Is everyone seeing what's on the screen now?
Yeah.
Okay, so basically, last board meeting, we just did a staff update on a solar offering, which we did a review on, to come up with an estimate of what it would cost our utility. And at the conclusion of that presentation, there's still a few questions. We had not talked with the actual energy services company. There were some questions about the RSS, whether there might have been some kind of a group angle with that respect. But what I did talk to Mary Tukey at Tukey Energy Services November 30th. Try to get a little bit more insight and confirm, or at least really confirm what staff was recommending, and everything we presented was in fact the current information. That includes the energy cost estimated between $30 and $40 dollars per megawatt hour. One thing that we did determine definitively was that other non-generation cost was going to be borne by the off-taker, and that includes the BPA transmission and retail support services cost. When I spoke to Mary about that, that was outside of her knowledge, and that's something each participating entity will have to take care of. And for more information, I did confirm the 70 to 100 megawatt size was based on DC rating. By all appearances, the BPA interconnect study is not performed, which presumably means that that cost would be incorporated into the rate, although I don't think there's anything out of the ordinary for this location. Shouldn't be a major issue. And they did say that they'll know by the end of January if there's sufficient interest in the project for it to proceed. So basically what we presented here and our ultimate recommendation that at this point in time, due to our low carbon content of supply, that anything we did go in for as far as solar, it would be limited to or above high water mark load or tier 2 portion, which is fairly small, and it would have a negative rate impact due to primarily the RSS charges that BPA will assess. So I guess that's all we have for the update, and no changes.
John, can you go back one slide? I guess it is. Okay. the let me get the chart. Okay, thank you. I guess last time we looked at this, I had a question about the I guess it's a $16 also. The description looks different. About the charge, what is that retail support service?
Retail support services, my understanding is that's pretty much firming up or backing up the solar deliveries by another source, i.e. BPA source.
And you're confident that that's a, you know, a reasonable charge for that, and it's and there's a because it, you know, like I still don't see clearly how there could be that much of a charge on something that basically is just going back to switching automatically to existing sources.
Yeah, well, yeah, and you know, basically, I'll be honest with you, Jim. We did talk to BPA about this to try to get insight as to what their charge would be, and they identified a project from 2-3 years ago in which they made the assessment on another solar project. It was somewhat similar, a little bit smaller, and we requested an update using the BP20 numbers, and that's where we get that retail support services cost. That's basically what BPA has provided us. As far as the developer of the project, they have no insight whatsoever. There's no interconnect study yet, and until that interconnect study is done, there will not be a final retail support services cost. But based on our discussions with BPA, it is going to be in the ballpark of $16 a megawatt hour.
John and Jim, this is Rick. In a previous life, when I used to work in power supply and managed a resource stack, and we were bringing resources into the Bonneville system, this is similar to what we paid for them to back it up. So you're basically taking a unit contingent resource and backing it up with Bonneville system.
Thanks, Rick.
Yeah, we talked about it. We also had a resource adequacy task force meeting at Energy Northwest, talked about this project. The numbers that they are coming up with are $15 or so, and I have no idea what that's based on. Independent, trying to escalate old numbers and what have you, but it's still going to be around that same amount of $16.
Hey, and Will, where did you hear that from? Because
that came from Energy Northwest staff,
and you know, and they know this better than we do. There is an upscale on the project size, and there may be some other issues that fall into that. So $15-$16, that's a, I would consider that a ballpark cost, but it does put our end use cost well above any alternatives. So like I said, it's not something we'd be interested in now.
It's not a game changer, and so I was just trying to verify that $16 is not an unreasonable number to put in your analysis.
Now we'll add, you know, we did a scoping on a solar project, and if this was in California, the generation cost would be as much as $10 lower, and it would be much closer to a break even, but once again, we're not in California.
Thank God. Okay. All right, good. Is that all you had on that?
That is it.
Okay, any action items we need to identify from the meeting?
I didn't hear any.
I didn't either.
All right, so. Well, there was one, and that's to get the previous meetings minutes out to the commissioners as soon as possible.
You're right, T. Thank you.
Oh, we did mention that this is the last meeting for the year, but there is a swearing in for Rick on the 28th, I believe. Is, Nicole, you want to talk about that? Oh, is she gone?
Oh, she's there. Hold on.
I'm here. I just have to unmute. start my video.
Yes, we are having a swearing-in at 1 o'clock on the 28th. We will just be, especially since this proclamation just got extended, we will be probably outside under the front awning of the building. You're muted, Will.
Still limited. Limited. I'm in good company. Everybody else is doing it. So this is still limited participation, right?
Yeah, and it would, of course, be 6-foot social distancing and masks required. We'll just have to be outside. It's like any goes under the rules for outside gatherings.
So when is this swearing-in ceremony?
The 28th at 1 o'clock. But if any, this was just going to be similar to what we did with you, Jim, where we just had a small group of people that wanted to be there. If we get more than one commissioner, we're going to have to notice it as a special meeting and open it up that way. So I guess if we have more than just Rick attending as far as commissioners go, you would need to let me know so T can get out.
Thanks. I thought he was already sworn in.
Well, he is for his short term because of the appointment process. He gets sworn in. We wanted to be able to get him in the system and be able to get the communications. That's for his short term that ends on December 31st. But then we'll have a, this swearing in is for his formal 6-year term, and they've already sent us the oath form and the empty looking certificate for the day. So. Yes, so that's what this is. It's for his whole 6-year term.
Okay.
Rick, you have to bring the champagne.
Okay, I'll find some local.
Brute will do. Okay, so we'll move on to comments from the public. Do we have anything, Sean?
Nothing in the chat, but if anybody from the public would like to make a comment, go ahead and give me your first name now. And for those on the phone, it's *6 to unmute. Hearing none, Will.
Good. All right. So if there's no other business to come before the commission, we stand adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.